several games with the Paducah Indians, and I got a phone call from a resident of Paducah, Mr. J.J. Sable, S-A-B-E-L. I remember the name very well. And he told me on the phone how happy he was that there was a Jewish ball player in the league finally, and would I be good enough to say yes to an invitation to have dinner at his home on Saturday night. Since we played day games, he said, you can be picked up. I'll pick you up at your hotel about 6:30 on Saturday. And I accepted. I was very delighted. And I got to his home and found all his friends and relatives were there, and I was presented as the one Jewish ball player in the league at the time. But I later found out that one of the real purposes of his invitation was the fact that he had two daughters of marriageable age, and that what he really wanted was for me to become acquainted with them and perhaps take them out. That was a very interesting story. I kept in touch with Mr. Sable for the remainder of the time I spent in Paducah, but I didn't go to dinner anymore.
In terms of baseball skills, what was most difficult for you to master, and what came most naturally to you?
It was very hard for me to tell, because I had had success at semi-pro levels. I had success at high school and college, and success with the Olympic team. I guess the most difficult thing for me to do was to learn to hit the curveball, a very difficult procedure for a lot of ball players, and one that turns out to be their Waterloo very often. I did change my batting stance from time to time with the advice of batting coaches and managers, and just wasn't able to settle down to one style with the hitting, although I hit comfortably well during my short career. I enjoyed catching, I enjoyed throwing, I enjoyed calling the plays, I enjoyed having the whole game out in front of me. I guess my desire to hit over 300 was not realized, and that was the thing I was always working on. When I began to coach semi-pro teams and the New York School for the Deaf baseball team for many years, I tried to imbue in the players I was working with some of the skills that I had, and tried to improve their performance over my own. That was my pleasure.
Who is the best baseball player that you ever saw? What player just had the most natural talent?
I guess the best baseball player I ever saw was, to me, was Hank Greenberg, because he worked so hard at whatever he was doing. He never rested on his laurels. I may have indicated to you at one time that in 1937 at spring training, Mickey Cochran decided that since Rudy York was unacceptable as a third baseman or a catcher and his big bat was needed, that he'd have to put him at first base where he could do the least harm to his team and to himself, because he kept getting his fingers banged up as a catcher and the balls kept bouncing off his chest at third base. And Greenberg very, very loyally agreed with Cochran's suggestion that he go to left field, and that Rudy York become the first baseman of the Tigers in 1937. Rudy York hit 18 home runs in the month of August, which still stands as a record for the most home runs hit in 1 month. To master left field after many years at first base, Greenberg worked hard. He got up early in the morning. He used me as a batting practice catcher. And as a fungo hitter to him, he had some rookie pitchers and used me as a rookie catcher, 7 a.m. at League Park, every single day, until he mastered ground balls, fly balls, liners. He was most gracious. He was kind. He was gentle. He helped me a great deal. And I'm not being subjective about this at all because of his religion, but his interest in a young player like me, his having written to me in the off-season, his greeting to me at training camp, were all wonderful experiences for a rookie. And I guess he was the major league player I got to know best.
What was your greatest thrill in your baseball career at whatever level?
I'm sorry.
What was your greatest thrill in your baseball career, regardless of what level it was?
I guess my greatest thrill was the first day of training camp in Lakeland, when the equipment manager doled out a uniform to me that said Detroit on it, who had the big old English D, to sit next to players I had read about and dreamed about, and put on the same uniform they put on, and go out on the field and practice with them, to begin to catch Schoolboy Rowe, Tommy Bridges, Eldon Orca, Joe Sullivan, were great thrills. And to have started off with the Tigers instead of in some obscure minor league was a great thrill. Perhaps if it had gone the other way, I would have been better off. But at any rate, you can't begin to feel the thrill that I had as a young player to be putting on a major league uniform.
What was the atmosphere at spring training?
Oh, it was very buoyant. The 1937 team was a very busy, active, fun-loving team. Cochran inspired everybody. He got everybody moving. They had good players. They had Charlie Gehringer, Billy Rogel, Marvin Owen at third base. I forgot a submarine ball pitcher, Eldon Orca, who was very hard to catch. I had to get hold of an extra sponge for my mitt because he was so fast and his ball was very, very heavy. It was an exciting time. And those were my fondest memories of baseball.
How did life during spring training with a major league team differ from the conditions in the minor leagues when you played?
Well, of course, the short time I did spend with the Detroit Tigers and then with the AAA Buffalo Bison International League indicated that there was more money available for food. You ate in the dining room, signed your checks. There was money available for laundry. Every week you got a laundry allowance. The team traveled by train, not by airplane. The short hops during spring training were done by Deluxe buses. It was a general atmosphere that there was more to work with. The teaching and the coaching was far greater because there would be five or six people on a major league team that could help you constantly. Hitting coaches, batting coaches, catching coaches, running and sliding help from JoJo White, and overall strategy from Mickey Cochran, constantly making sure that his rookie catchers got as much out of every practice day as possible. In the minor leagues, usually the manager or a playing manager was the one person selected by the major league affiliate, or the major league team that had affiliates in the minor leagues, the one player on a squad of 15 or 16 or 17 who could teach. And they were not always as good and as competent and as patient with young players as Cochran and Hayworth and Ray Perkins, another coach for the Detroit Tigers. It was like being in school again. They told you why to do things a certain way. They told you how to do it. They told you how to avoid getting hurt, how to stand behind the plate as a catcher and not tense yourself up so that if the ball came off the bat, you wouldn't get broken fingers. Entirely new skills. I never got them from my high school coach or college coach or minor league coach. Never.
Paul, was it hard being a rookie to get along with the umpires?
No, I knew my place. I didn't argue balls and strikes. I knew from early days that judgment calls were not to be disputed. I did my business. I minded my business. I was trying to learn my business. I wasn't in any position to start fighting with umpires. I probably didn't know enough about the nuances of the game, nor was it my place as a rookie catcher. My manager was the one who would fight with the umpires, not me.
How did your personal dealings go with the front office people?
I had no dealings with the front office people. They were just simple directions, memoranda, or someone coming up to me in person and saying, your next place will be Charleston, West Virginia. Later in the mail, I got another communication that Charleston had too many catchers and I should report to the Canadian American League, the Rome Colonels. Those were expected communications. I was dreaming I would like to make the Tigers as a rookie. I didn't have as much skill as Bertie Tebbets or Mike Tresh or Hayworth, and I understood that. I was younger. Not that young players can't be great players, but my experience was limited, my desire was high, my work habits were strong, and I dreamt every night about making that squad. And I was just happy to have had the chance.
How different do you think baseball is today from the time when you played?
I think the skills are more highly defined and refined. I think the way in which you prepare for a career in Major League ball today is quite different. Understanding of what is liable to be pitched next, the fact that good pitchers don't give you a good ball to hit at. They work the corners. They try to trap you into swinging at balls that are not hittable. It's a constant game of guessing back and forth. First time up, should you hit the first ball? If you hit the first ball the first time up, the second time up, should you let the second one go by, first and second go by? Constantly thinking about what is he out there to do, what are you up at the plate to do? And this mental agility that you had to go through, frankly, every 30 to 45 seconds, I think cites the difference between the science of hitting, the science of pitching, the science of catching, more than the practice. I think there's a direct science in the whole way the game is played. And in watching TV now and watching Major League Ball, I can see the great refinements that have taken place since the time when I played.
Are the refinements in the actual skills themselves or just in the strategies behind them?
I think baseball is more sharply played now, with more intensity, with more understanding. I think the skills are not just mental, but actually in carrying them out on the field, throwing to the right cutoff man, being able to throw the balls to second base. Now you see when the catcher is about to let loose to try to erase a base runner who's trying to steal second, the pitchers almost immediately fly to the ground as if they were heading for a foxhole in a war situation, because the good catchers aim the ball at the button on the top of the pitcher's cap, and with the proper snap throw, the ball should then nestle down right into the second baseman or the shortstop's hands, 6 inches above the base. The pitchers immediately fall to the ground today with good catchers, because you can get your head knocked off if you don't do that.
And in the old days, they didn't necessarily go right down.
The snap throws were not as sharp. They didn't react as fast, I believe, as they do now. They just did not. Base running was entirely different then. Leads were less chancy. Hands were kept on the knees so you could push off on the knees to get a good start back to the base or the second, pretty much the way a swimmer pushes off with his toes against the edge of the pool when he turns.